When I was in high school, the most common foreign language to take was French. Maybe because if any of us thought of going anywhere, Paris seemed like a good place to go. These days, I think it's more likely to be Chinese or Japanese if you're thinking about world travel, or Spanish because it's so prevalent in the U.S. But maybe we weren't so crazy, those of us who still find bonjour more appealing than ni hao. Julie Barlow and Jean-Benoît Nadeau are Canadians who had to learn French to speak to each other. And that led to an impassioned interest in the language. Anne Strangechamps was curious about that passion.
You and your partner have made a very thorough study of the history of the French language. What got you interested in the subject?
I mean, it was sort of an offshoot of our previous book, which was called 60 Million Frenchmen Can't Be Wrong, which was a study, a sort of global study of the French and why they think the way they do and organize themselves. And we had been sent to write 60 Million Frenchmen Can't Be Wrong originally by an American foundation who wanted us to explore why the French were resisting globalization. And one of the things we realized while we were there was, first of all, that the French weren't resisting globalization at all. And
there goes
secondly,
your book.
Yeah, there goes the idea for the fellowship. We turned it around, you know, and decided just to study the French and why the perceptions were the American media had the perceptions they did. And that's sort of the basis behind the book on the French. But we realized while we were there that French really was a global language. And we decided, you know, that's the story we really want to tell. You know, how did French get where it is? How did it export itself? How did it become so influential? And the fact that it really is to this day still an incredibly influential language, in spite of what a lot of people think and in spite of what the French themselves tend to think, which was interesting.
At one time, French was the language that native English speakers loved the most. I mean, people fell in love with French. And for a long time, French was the language of the high culture. It was the language of art and philosophy and diplomacy. It sort of ruled the world once, I guess, didn't it?
Yeah, it definitely ruled the world. It ruled the world, I mean, specifically in the beginning in the 18th century with the salon culture in France and on into the 19th century. And it's funny because when we were researching for our book, we were asking people who are a little down on French these days, particularly in the United States, the teachers who are trying to promote French and are sort of facing the onslaught of Spanish and now Chinese. And we were asking them about the things, you know, why did you want to learn French? What did you want to learn? What attracted you to the language? And a lot of the reasons that people learn French are still those same reasons. People do still perceive it as a language of associated with refinement, with cuisine, with art, with philosophy, with literature. And people still want, there's something about French culture that's very charismatic, and people still want to participate in that and be part of that. Another thing that's sort of sprung up over, particularly over the last decades, is that French has come to represent a bit of a different worldview. And I think that the French and Quebecers in particular are more and more aware of this and more using this sort of to promote French.
What's the different worldview?
With the rise of the Francophonie, the organization that's a bit like the Commonwealth but French-speaking countries. I mean, French is a very political language, and it's become associated with, in its history, of course, the ideals of the French Revolution. And with a lot of international humanitarian associations that are based in Geneva, French still is, ironically, you know, associated with being a passionate language, of one language of culture, a language of love, you know, still, but also with ideas of liberty, other ideas of human rights, you know, and things like that. So there are these two things going on that are still really attracting people to French, I think.
So in terms of the politics of the French language, is French seen also as, if one embraces French, is one embracing the antithesis of America's cultural hegemony?
Yeah, to a certain extent, I think that that's true and more true. I mean, one problem with the French themselves is that, I mean, there's a huge world of French speakers out there. 200 million people speak French on the planet. It's far from being the world's, you know, most spoken language. I think it's eighth or ninth now. But it's still a huge body of speakers out there. And the French have kept that at arm's length for a long time, partly because of the aftermath of the colonial misadventures. You know, the decolonization was tough on the French, and they don't want to be associated with another thing that looks like colonialism all over again. So they've kept all the ex-colonies at arm's length. And of course, a lot of the ex-colonies, most of the ex-colonies, use French now, and it's still the language of education, you know, in West Africa.
Well, one of the things that you write about, one of the things that really sets French apart as a language is in part the attitude the French have toward it. They are really remarkably passionate about their language.
They are. And, I mean, there's a number of historical reasons that that is sort of become the case. French was the first language in 1539. It became the language of state. It was the first language to become the language of a state. And that's remained until this day. It's a hard thing for a lot of English speakers to understand. The other thing, of course, is the creation of the French Academy in 1635 and the idea of a body ruling over a language, again, is another hard idea for a lot of Anglophones to sort of get their head around.
What exactly is the French Academy, and is it still going?
Yeah, the French Academy is still going. A lot of people think it's the only language academy in the world. It's so well known, you know. The French Academy was created, not many people know this, to actually, all it was created to do was to write a dictionary. And it's done a terrible job of that, and it's made the dictionaries that are never used, and it's never really been very efficient in that manner. The main importance of the French Academy today is its symbolic power as a place where the French language is controlled. And it's not, actually. I mean, the French Academy doesn't pass laws. It has no legal power whatsoever over the language. It sort of rubber stamps decisions that are made by another body. But it's the symbolic power of the French Academy to the French as a place where their language is, the norm of the language is maintained.
So what sorts of things does the French Academy weigh in on?
Well, there have been a number of language reform. I mean, well, they'll be asked these days whether a certain vocabulary change. Well, let me step back a little bit. There's this thing called the Délégation de la Langue, Comité Linguistique, linguistic committees that function in France, and it's part of the government. And they're volunteers who keep an eye on what sort of foreign languages are creeping into business. I mean, it's all about industry. And they will suggest new terms. In fact, they call Quebec every day to get ideas, because Quebec is very good at inventing new terms to replace English words that float into the language.
For example,
email. It's a famous example. The French were trying to find a French word for email, and they came up with mail, which was sort of an acronym. It didn't really work very well. And Quebecers came up with courriel, which is a mix of electronic, and courrier, mail. And it's very good. It works, and it's very cute. Quebecers later came up with a fantastic expression called pourriel, which is for junk, for spam, for junk mail, which is a mixture of pourri, rotten, and electronic mail.
Oh, that's so good.
You know, it's this kind of thing. The French called Quebecers up almost every day to find things like that. But the Academy, the French Academy, has a sort of, you know what it is? It's a kind of museum where people feel the French's language is being taken care of. It's got a lot of symbolic power. It doesn't actually do much.
So the French really treat their language, they have a kind of curatorial attitude toward
yes,
it. They treat their language as a work of art, which,
yep.
I mean, we don't do that at all in the U.S., at least. You know,
yeah.
New words enter English all the time, and
yeah.
The language is constantly morphing and changing, and some people
yeah.
feel, you know, being bastardized, but that's the nature of English. It's such a melting
yeah.
pot, really.
Yeah.
But French is not like that.
Well, the interesting thing is that there's a difference between what really happens in French and this symbolic idea that the French language has a norm. Now, this is all this very powerful idea that the French is indeed like there's a curator working on French. This, of course, goes back to the purism and the that arose in the creation of the French Academy in the 17th century. And this is a theme that's remained in French culture and among all Francophones ever since. The reality, of course, is that French is changing all the time. One of the things we discovered, I mean, there's a lot of people perceive or portray English as a much more flexible language that invites a lot more vocabulary in. That's not really true. French probably does as much as English. What the French do is that they separate the terminology and vocabulary, everything that's scientific and technical, into separate dictionaries where that language doesn't appear in the mainstream dictionaries, the Larousse dictionary, for example. And it looks like there's less words in French, but there aren't actually.
What do you see as the future of French?
Well, I don't think that after so many centuries of being an influential, important international language and with the sort of clout that French has developed, I don't think it's going to disappear as an international language anytime soon. I see that the Chinese are learning the lessons of the French and starting to, you know, export teachers and work on various ways to export the language and the culture of China. And, you know, that sort of thing will perhaps eventually displace French. But it's hard to predict, you know. There's a lot of cultural exchange going on between Francophone countries that don't have anything to do with France now. Exchanges between, say, Quebec and Morocco. I know that Morocco wanted to develop, for instance, an MBA program in French, and so they took the idea from the University of Sherbrooke in Montreal. You know, there's a lot of this sort of exchange going on, which is creating a kind of momentum of its own. And it's growing. I mean, internet and easy communication between countries is working in favor of French the way it's working in favor of English. Not to the same extent, but we were surprised in our travels to see, you know, relationships being struck up between Senegal and Quebec or a maritime province and another country in West Africa. Mm. This stuff's going on everywhere, and French still is being used in international institutions less than it was, you know, a century ago, but it's a language that still has quite a bit of clout.
Julie Barlow is the author with her partner Jean-Benoît Nadeau of The Story of French. She talked with Anne Strange.